You're listening to Feedback with Bill Saunders on News Talk 830 WEEU and 830WEEU.com. A new generation of talk.
Welcome to the Friday edition of Feedback, your on-air town square here on the Voice of Berks and Beyond, News Talk 830 WEEU. Good morning, everyone. I'm Bill Saunders, along with Sean Tansky, and our phone numbers here are 610-374-8800 or toll-free 888-401-0459, and you can text your opinion to us now. Our dedicated line there is 484-650-3373. And, of course, we still have our email address at feedback@830weeu.com. We're also on a bunch of podcast platforms. We'll get into that a little bit later on. But let's take a look and see what our top three topics of the day are. A bill encouraging employers to contribute to their employees' college savings accounts is approved by the State House. Wait till you hear how much Washington politicians made in stock trades last year. It's an eye-popper. I'll warn you now. And a Manhattan Community Education Council passes a resolution standing up for girls in school sports. And at 11 o'clock today, Dr. Timothy Blessing, a history professor at Alvernia University, will join me for a discussion centering around the following question. Is the United States still a relevant player on the international stage? Can't wait to get into that discussion with Tim this morning at 11 o'clock. Okay, with all that said, let's take a look at this bill that unanimously passed the State House this week. And I got this from the Media News Group. The bill would encourage Pennsylvania employers to contribute to its employees' PA 529 tuition savings accounts. The bipartisan legislation was written by State Representative Paul Friel, who is a Democrat from Chester County, and State Representative Kristen Marcel, a Republican from Bucks County. It's House Bill 1745. Now, that bill would amend the state tax code to add the 529 Tuition Account Program, or TAP, tax credit, allowing for employer contributions to PA 529 college and career savings program accounts. Friel and Marcel said their proposal aims to incentivize Pennsylvania employers to help their employees save for future education expenses. And now that it has passed the House, it goes on to the Republican-controlled Senate for their consideration. And if it's approved there, then it goes on to Governor Shapiro for his signing. We'll keep up on that and see where that goes. Then there is this. Remember this this latest talk within Congress for a final budget for this year, even though we're, what, 6 months into the fiscal year already? Only in Washington. Well, now they've approved the first step, which regarded the spending plans for a few departments in Washington. Well, now they're looking at a package for the remainder of government to keep it funded through the rest of the fiscal year, which ends on September 30th, by the way. Their deadline is tonight at midnight. So according to the Washington Times, the heads of the House and Senate Appropriations Committees dropped the last massive funding package of the current spending cycle yesterday, teeing up an end to the spending fight. Boy, could they take it up to the last minute or what? The $1.2 trillion package includes funding for six agencies: the Pentagon, Department of Homeland Security, State and Foreign Operations, Legislative Branch and Services, Financial Services, and Labor. They constitute about 70% of Congress's constitutionally obligated funding responsibilities. And as I said, Congress has until midnight tonight to pass this package to avert a partial government shutdown. Among the Democratic policy wins in this spending plan are 12,000 special immigrant visas for Afghan refugees and a $1 billion investment in Head Start programs across the country. Other notable policy and spending changes touted by Speaker Johnson include a $27 billion bump to the Defense Department a 5.2% pay increase for service members, $1.2 billion to staunch the flow of fentanyl and other illicit drugs from entering the country, a continuation of $3.3 billion in annual funding to Israel, and slashing 6% in overall foreign aid funding. So keep your fingers crossed and hope that that Congress is able to come up with an approval of this spending plan so that Congress or so that the government itself can continue to operate going forward. And then there is, oh, the president loves to spend our money, and he loves to wipe out student debt. Yeah, he's at it again with student debt. This time, it's another $6 billion of student loan debt that he's wiping off. He's just doing away with it. Well, how's he doing that? By using the tax dollars that you and I give to the federal government. That's how he's doing it. And let's face it, it's to buy votes for November. And any politician is going to do that, right? Well, anyway, according to the Washington Times, the president said yesterday he is canceling student debt for 78,000 teachers, firefighters, and other public service workers under an existing law. The move forgives nearly $6 billion under the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, and it's the president's latest attempt to wipe out college debt after a marquee debt forgiveness effort ran into legal and political roadblocks. But why should that stop the president? Mr. Biden will send an email to persons who benefit from the program, and I guess that email will say, "You can thank me in November." Anyway, debt forgiveness is a key agenda item for Mr. Biden and his Democratic allies. He's trying to keep young voters in his corner after they fueled his 2020 win over former President Donald Trump. Facing a rematch, some young voters appear to be abandoning the elderly president over his position on Israel's war in Gaza and other issues. So this is one way that he can try and shore up that support again, I guess. And then there is this. Some Republican senators are calling out the Biden administration over some energy taxes that appear in the president's proposed budget. And here's what Fox News is reporting. It's a group of 24 Senate Republicans who are calling out the administration for what they're saying is weaponizing. I'm getting sick and tired of all the politicians using that word. And both sides are doing it. But they're claiming the Biden administration is weaponizing the tax code to stifle domestic energy production in the president's proposed 2025 budget. In a letter Thursday to Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, this group of GOP lawmakers, led by Senator Joe Barrasso, a Republican from Wyoming, who grew up in our area, by the way, in Redding, highlighted the more than $110 billion in tax hikes targeting domestic production of oil, gas, and coal produced in the budget, or proposed in the budget, I should say. They say such an action would only lead to higher prices for Americans and allies worldwide. And oh, by the way, what did I see this morning? Oh, yeah, coming into work today, yesterday, the cost of, and I'm not going to name the gas station that I pass, but yesterday, the price of a regular gallon of gas at this one station I pass every day on my way to work was $3.59 a gallon. This morning on my way to work, that same gas station, $3.79 a gallon. Now, mind you, it was only, 3 weeks ago that their sign said $3.39 a gallon. So, yeah, you can see where we're heading here at the pump. I guess that means that we're going to have to siphon off more oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve in order to get that price down between now and November, huh? We'll see if the president does that, by the way. But here's what Barrasso and the other senators wrote in their letter to Secretary Yellen. The administration has once again doubled down on weaponizing the tax code against U.S. energy producers. It is alarming that the administration believes utilizing our nation's abundant natural resources will be detrimental to long-term energy security. Their letter goes on to say, sadly, the administration would willingly suppress energy production, knowing it means fewer jobs and higher prices for the American people, they continued. Their letter goes on to say, America is fortunate to have abundant energy resources. Our nation needs to be focused on unleashing American energy and innovation instead of throwing away one of our biggest economic and geopolitical advantages. Well, earlier this month, the president released his fiscal year 2025 budget. It comes in at $7.3 trillion, by the way. Yeah, and we're quickly approaching $35 trillion in total debt. Well, as part of the proposal, the Treasury Department released a green book detailing the mechanisms for raising government revenue, a report which listed tax hikes on energy production. And the Republicans noted that in that green book, the Treasury Department explained that it would strip tax incentives worth $110 billion from the energy industry because, quote, oil, gas, and coal tax preferences distort markets by encouraging more investment in the fossil fuel sector than would occur under a neutral system. So I guess the non-profitable green energy sector that wouldn't exist if it weren't for subsidies from the federal government is more advantageous for the government at this point. The Treasury Department added in this green book of theirs, this market distortion is detrimental to long-term energy security and is also inconsistent with the administration's policy of supporting a clean energy economy, reducing our reliance on oil, and reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Energy security, huh? All right, we'll see how secure that is when we go all green in the future. Then there is this. This was eye-popping for me when I saw this yesterday. It's an op-ed piece that appears in the Washington Times written by Joseph Curl. The headline of it is, get ready for this now? Get a load of this. The headline reads, "Ban it already. Lawmakers made $1 billion, that's billion with a B, from stock deals last year." And then the subhead is, "Congress has an uncanny knack for investing." So here's, and I'm not going to read the entire piece that Mr. Curl wrote, but instead I'm going to hone in on the specifics here. Here's what he writes. "Oh, the paradox of congressional stock trading, where our dear elected lawmakers seem to have the Midas touch, turning closed-door briefings into gold. Except the gold doesn't trickle down to John Q. Public, but lines the pockets of those with Capitol Hill access badges. In a stirring saga fit for the annals of Wall Street folklore, our elected magicians made over $1 billion vanish from the market and abracadabra reappear in their portfolios. Ah, the efficiency of democracy at work," Mr. Curl writes. Now enters the star-studded cast, led by none other than former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who, with her $100 million in trades, might as well be the Gordon Gecko of government. Then there's the astonishing Representative Brian Higgins, a Democrat from New York, who is not just doing well, he's doing 238% returns well. And let's not forget Republican Representative Mark Green of Tennessee, who apparently has a knack for picking stocks as well as he chairs committees. He made gains of 122.2%. Other studies have found that stocks of a bunch of members of Congress have returned around 273% since April of 2020. That's during the pandemic. How well did your portfolio do during the pandemic, folks? But wait, you say, aren't these noble souls bound by the Stock Act? Precisely, writes Mr. Curl, the very legislation that slaps the wrist with a laughable $200 fine, the equivalent of leaving a senatorial tip for a bowl of bean soup at the Senate cafeteria. A report from Business Insider found that 49 members of Congress and 182 senior-level congressional staffers had violated the so-called Stock Act, which requires public disclosure by themselves and their family members within 45 days of sales or purchases of individual stocks, bonds, and commodity futures. Our hapless heroes in high offices say they're all for banning Congress from stock trading because, of course, nothing says commitment like unanimous lip service, Mr. Curl writes. Mrs. Pelosi herself has voiced support for such a ban, yet she evidently sees merit in a broader brushstroke. Perhaps in the same way, she sees vast potential in diversifying her portfolio. Just last year, Lady P enjoyed a whopping 65% return on her investments, well over double the S&P's 500 overall 24% gain. Mrs. Pelosi and her husband have made millions since she took office. In December of 2022, the couple sold more than $1.5 million in Alphabet stock. Now, Alphabet is the owner of Google, the search engine. Then, guess what happened? The Justice Department announced an antitrust lawsuit against the tech giant the very next month. Wow, what a coincidence. The Pelosi's sold 30,000 shares of Alphabet on December 20th, 21st, and 28th of 2022, according to the Daily Caller. They received between $1.5 million and $3 million for the total sale, according to a financial disclosure form filed on January 12th of 2023. DOJ announced its lawsuit against Alphabet on January 23rd. Between 2007 and 2020, Mrs. Pelosi and her husband saw their stock portfolio's worth soar by as much as $30 million. Paul Pelosi's net worth is said to be more than $120 million, mostly because of his holdings in technology stocks. Nancy and Paul Pelosi, he of the famed mugshot after his drunken driving arrest, seem to have a knack for well-timed trades. The couple bought and sold millions in NVIDIA stocks just before a bill passed that subsidized the U.S. semiconductor industry with $280 billion. Another coincidence. Here's the problem. Lawmakers are often privy to inside information that could lead to inside trading, and that's why they shouldn't be allowed to buy and sell stocks while they're in office. 70% of Americans support a ban on this covert commerce. Unusual Whales is a trading group that compiled a report of Congress members' trading activity in 2023. They say enough already. It's outrageous that members of Congress are gaming the stock market while millions of Americans struggle to make ends meet. I'd call it gangster behavior, but that would imply it's illegal. And sadly, it is not, the group said in a statement. The overwhelming majority of Americans want this to stop, so let's make it stop, they continued in their statement. Well, duh, writes Mr. Curl. But of course, it won't. Joseph Curl with a piece that appears in the Washington Times. The headline reads, "Ban it already. Lawmakers made $1 billion from stock deals last year." Does that make your eyes pop out like it did mine? And I'm still waiting for my 401k to come back up to value. Let's see, I lost, we won't get into all that. I certainly didn't make the $1 billion in my stock portfolio. I may have lost that amount, actually. Thank you. Thank you, members of Congress. We love it when we vote for you and expect you to do things for us, and instead you enrich yourselves. All right, we'll be back with more of Feedback on this Friday morning in just a bit. Stay with us.
News you can use.
I feel more informed when I listen.
News Talk 830, WEEU.
And now back to Feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
Of course, I'm being facetious when I say my portfolio lost $1 billion. It just feels like I did. Welcome back to Feedback on this Friday morning here on the Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. We welcome your calls today, 610-374-8800, toll-free, 888-401-0459. But we also have other ways that you can share your opinion with us, by text at 484-650-3373. Or by email at feedback at 830weeu.com. In fact, I got a text message Let me bring it up on my phone here. Here we go. From Doug of Reading, in reference to the latest debt relief effort by the president, he says, I see we eliminated more college debt yesterday. How, after the Supreme Court said Biden could not do it, is it still being done? Well, Doug, in this effort, in this latest effort to eliminate debt for 78,000 people, the president is using an existing law. So that's his way of getting around the SCOTUS decision that took place a couple of months ago, where they said, Mr. President, you can't do it on your own. But yeah, either way, it's another $6 billion of taxpayer money right out the door there. Yeah, we're talking about money that people borrowed in order to get higher education, and now we, all of us, are going to pick up the tab for that. While this country is looking at roughly $35 trillion of debt, yeah, we're at $34.5 trillion and climbing now. And it was back in the early part of January when we hit the $34 trillion figure. And already we're inching closer and closer to $35 trillion. No end in sight to spending. And the president is going to take $6 billion that could go toward nipping that, or at least putting some dent in that debt limit, in that debt amount, rather. And he's going to use it to wipe out other people's debt that they voluntarily took on. All right, I'll come off my soapbox. I hope that answers your question. Doug, I appreciate your text message to me this morning. All right. Interesting op-ed piece that appears in the New York Post, written by their editorial board. Again, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but the headline is Potential Transgender Sports Ban in Ultra-Woke Manhattan Would Be a Big Win for Athletes and Sanity. Now, they're going to talk here in their piece about Manhattan's Community Education Council District 2. So before I read this piece, let me explain what a Community Education Council consists of. On their board are parents, district residents, and business owners, who and the residents and business owners are appointed by elected leaders, and also students are on this council. So now you've got an idea as to who's on these councils, and their job is to guide the district, the school district that they represent, with their policies. So with that said, let me share with you what the New York Post editorial board wrote in their paper today. Manhattan's Community Education Council District 2 overwhelmingly passed a resolution standing up for girls in school sports. Let me applaud that. On an 8-3 vote, the CEC approved a measure co-sponsored by Post contributor Maud Moran to demand that the City Department of Education allow a public review of its current obscene policy allowing trans players, i.e. biological males, on girls' teams. Various wokists whined and gnashed their teeth at the meeting, including lefty City Councilman Eric Botcher. Now, again, these aren't my words. I'm reading directly from this op-ed piece. Even trans actor Elliot Page got in on the action. And in parentheses, they write, who knew Page cared so much about internal New York City school politics? Who's Elliot Page? I don't know that actor, but anyway, that's neither here nor there. And the measure will almost certainly be no more than symbolic. The Department of Education, like every other city and state agency, lacks the will to face down the entrenched forces of lefty insanity, writes the New York Post editorial board. But still, it shows that in the heart of the deepest blue progressive cloud cuckoo land, again, not my words, New York Post editorial board, some parents are not afraid to make their voices heard and stand up for their daughters. And I applaud that. Yeah, that last part is my words. The idea that biological males don't enjoy a size and strength advantage over girls is absurd. One need look no further than the career of Leah Thomas, a mediocre men's swimmer before transition and a national champion as a woman, for proof of that. Remember Leah Thomas from the University of Pennsylvania swimming team? As for the histrionic rhetoric from opponents of the measure, it's putting a target on students' backs, screeched CEC member Gavin Healy. No, this is about fairness, not discrimination, writes the editorial board. Rules forcing girls to compete against biological males are simply about power, not justice, about forcing all to bend the knee to a fashionable ideology. That's why their proponents are ashamed of having to debate the issue, and why they're so hostile even to the idea of a simple public review. Because they know they have no argument other than, we're in charge. The CEC move, along with Nassau County's recent ban on biological males in women's sports at county-run facilities, is great news, and rational people everywhere should take heart from it. Again, that's the New York Post editorial board with a piece that appears in the paper today. The headline reads, Potential Transgender Sports Ban in Ultra-Woke Manhattan Would Be a Big Win for Athletes and Sanity. And along with that, I wanted to share this story that the federal government DOJ, the Department of Justice, is doing. This appeared in The Hill the other day. Listen up to what they're doing here. A Justice Department investigation found that a Maryland college failed to respond properly to allegations of sexual abuse brought against the former swim and diving coach at the school. The Department of Justice announced earlier this week that its investigation into the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, found that its failure to address allegations of sex discrimination violated Title IX. Wow. UMBC, it said, failed to address, UMBC being the college, the Department of Justice, said failed to address allegations that the former head coach filmed student athletes who were showering and sexually touched male student athletes. The DOJ said it informed the college of its findings in a letter on Monday, writing that the school failed to sufficiently oversee its athletics department and did not devote adequate resources to its Title IX compliance efforts. Now, I keep emphasizing Title IX here because the women athletes who feel offended, and rightfully so, by having to share a locker room with a transgender who hasn't transgendered over to the female side, or however you want to put it, and they still have the male parts, and yet they're sharing a locker room with these women. The women are saying that the promises made to them under Title IX are not being kept. Now, is the Justice Department doing anything about that? No. No, instead they're taking on this case. I could go on and on about the details of this case involving Maryland. I know we're in the Maryland case, we're talking about somebody who sexually abused male swimmers in this particular case. But the same premise applies here, as far as I'm concerned. All I've got to say is, what about the female athletes who have said that their Title IX protections are not being met, and having to share a locker room with a transgender who still has male body parts? To me, that's just as unfair as what's going on here. Selective prosecution is what we're looking at here. Selective enforcement of Title IX, it seems to be the case. Well, speaking about enforcement, did you hear this story about what went on at the southern border yesterday? Here's what the New York Post is reporting, if you haven't heard about it. A group of over 100 migrants attempted to enter the U.S. illegally by rushing a border wall yesterday, breaking through razor wire and knocking over guards in the process. The Post had earlier witnessed around 600 migrants amassed at the international border as part of a spring surge of migrants arriving and hoping to gain access to the U.S. Yeah, now that weather is getting better here, you can expect to see the numbers of migrants getting larger. The Texas National Guard were attempting to organize them into smaller groups, but the situation grew tense after some women and children were separated from adult males by the guardsmen. Video taken by the Post showed one set of migrants, mostly single men, then rushing the Texas troops. A group of men with hoodies, gloves, and winter jackets could be seen pulling fencing away and dashing through the concertina wire as a group of five guards formed a defensive position to fill the gap. The guardsmen firmly held their rifles and stood their ground in front of the migrants, who heavily outnumbered them, reports the New York Post. A few put their hands directly on the migrants to keep them back in response to being pushed, as the scene became louder and more chaotic. In the video, the Post reports, some figures put their hands up in surrender. But seconds later, others scrambled through, with some coming through the guards' legs and knocking them out of the way. The group then scrambled to the border gate and started to shout at guardsmen on the other side. Some were arrested, and the rest of the people in the group were brought into the U.S. for processing, according to local reports. Despite the commotion, the city of El Paso's migrant dashboard showed 743 people had been released from custody and into the United States yesterday. They were either released on parole or to pursue asylum claims in accordance with President Biden's current policies. In recent days, thousands of migrants have once again descended on the city, with the dashboard showing between 2,000 and 2,500 people held in Border Patrol custody nightly. So yeah, the numbers are growing again there at the southern border. Well, we're going to talk about some findings of a poll in relation to the crisis down there at the border in just a bit, a piece that appears in USA Today. Well, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back with more of this Friday edition of Feedback in just a bit.
Serving Collegeville, North Wales, King of Prussia, and all of Montgomery County. This is News Talk 830 WEEU.
The voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback. You're on air Town Square here on The Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Pat in Moton sent me a text message. He said, $1 billion divided by 535 members of Congress comes out to nearly $1.9 million per member. Insane. Well, Pat, you're assuming that every lawmaker down there is doing this, and that's not the case. So because that's not the case, imagine that profit amount is even higher per member who is doing it. I wish they would pass out a full list of who is responsible. The article that I shared with you mentioned the biggest culprits, Nancy Pelosi being the biggest. So if you're thinking I'm picking on Democrats, no, look at the numbers. Nancy Pelosi and her husband are the biggest offenders of that. And I mentioned a few others, including a Republican in there. But I wish I had a list of all of the lawmakers who are profiting off of their office down there in Washington. Again, it just was an eye-popper for me, and I couldn't believe it. Well, I do believe it. Well, what am I saying? All right, let's go to the phones right now. Let's go to Birdsboro and talk with Kevin today. Kevin, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Hey, good morning, Bill. Hey, I turned on the radio there. I jumped in my pickup after just leaving the gym, and I heard you with the border. I seen a clip last night about, I guess they crashed through the razor wire yesterday, pushing the National Guard right out of the way. And I mean, how anybody can think that this is right? And I'd like to know why the National Guard is not armed. I don't understand. I don't. I mean, I don't care what side you stand on, Bill, but rushing the National Guard and coming through the razor and
First of all, you're saying they weren't armed. What I read from this article is the guardsmen firmly held their rifles and stood their ground in front of the migrants, who heavily outnumbered them. So they are armed. Now, whether they have been ordered not to fire, that's something else. Which is probably the case.
You can't fire. Yeah. Now the clip I saw, okay, so I stand corrected. I did not see any weapons. I just saw their backs and then them being rushed. and they just backed out of the way. Then you couldn't see the National Guard anymore. You just saw them going to the big fence, and that's the clip that I saw. So I'm not sure about being armed then, okay?
Yeah, I hear you.
But, no. But, I mean, it's any way you look at it, this is not right. You're breaking our laws. You're invading our border. And then I'm not a TikTok or Facebook. But then there was I listened to a clip. I listened to another conservative station, and I don't need to say the name. Later in the afternoon, it's out of Philly. We have migrants making videos and telling other migrants how to sign up for this and where to go. And one of them is saying, thank you, Poppy Biden, for letting me come here. And all you fools that work your whole life, I don't know if it'll work for word, you're not even collecting $2,500 a month for Social Security, and I'm getting $2,500 a month, and I don't like to work. Coward. I mean, I was a clip from a TikTok video, but are they getting $2,500 a month? It's insane.
Well, let's not group all the migrants into this category of people who don't want to work and they want to live off the dole, because a lot of them do want to make a living here in the United States that they can't make in their home country, and they are willing to work.
Bill?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry, but Bill, and I would say it again, and I said it before talking to you. You want to come here legally, like everybody else? Yes, and there is opportunity here, but you can't crash through a gate and come across the river, and because we don't know who's who, we don't know which ones are good and which ones are bad. I'm not saying that they're all bad. I'm sure some of them want a better life. I know they do, but you can't do it that way. You already broke our laws as soon as you're coming across the border the wrong way.
Oh, I'm in agreement with you on that. I'm in agreement. I'm not arguing that point at all. I just wanted to make sure that Kevin, I just wanted to make sure that by highlighting that one clip you heard, that we're not talking about all migrants thinking that way.
I go, okay, you got that. You got it. And then real quick, people, I don't care if you like Trump, you hate Trump. I hear people still call in. Did you hear what Donald Trump said now? I don't care what he said. Okay. What they're doing to him up in New York, every American should be upset and appalled. Okay? It 22 days and they want to seize the man's assets. It takes years in court any other time to do this to any other citizen. You know that, Bill. You could tie up that kind of stuff for years. I know. So where does Letitia James, how they're getting away with this? Should be appalled. Honestly, it's, you know, I keep hearing about Donald Trump this and Donald Trump that. You know, Bill, where a lot of us are, tell me your policies. I want to hear what are you going to do for national security, the economy. They think we're all dumb and they're trying to tell us that, the economy's doing okay. It's coming back. Where? I don't see it. There's not even that much work. There's some work. Everything that's going on, they're trying to pull wool over our eyes. So it's like people are so tired. And I heard you say it a couple of times. You're obsessed with Donald Trump. They are. These people are obsessed with the Donald Trump syndrome. I firmly believe it. And I just hope they see the light, no matter what side you're on, to make a better country for all of us and a safe country for our kids and our grandkids. So, but I just saw that last, and I wanted to make a comment. I heard you talking about the border.
All right, buddy. Appreciated the call today. I got to go for a hard break here before we end the hour.
All right.
But appreciated the opinion you shared today.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Yep.
William in Allentown, if you want to hang in there, I can take your call first thing when we go into the next hour. But we're fresh out of time for hour number one. I'd love to hear from you as to what you have to say about Title IX. So hang in there if you want to. Or call back. I'll leave that up to you. But right now we're going to break for some commercials here. And we'll be back with the final seconds of the first hour of this Friday edition of Feedback in just a bit. Stay with us.
serving Bethel, Hamburg, Birdsboro, and all of Berks County. This is News Talk 830, WEEU.
All right, that does it for hour number one of feedback today. We'll be back with the hour number two segment and your calls when feedback continues. But right now it's news time, followed by sports with our own Bob McCool. It's all here on the voice of Berks and Beyond, News Talk 830 WEEU. And thank you for tuning in today.
Back to feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back as we kick off hour number two of this Friday edition of feedback. Don't forget Dr. Timothy Blessing, history professor from Alvernia University, will be joining me during the 11 o'clock hour today. And we're going to discuss the question, is the United States still a relevant player on the international stage? Stay with us for that. It's always a very informative session when Tim Blessing is with me. So that's 11 o'clock today here on Feedback. Good morning, everyone. I'm Bill Saunders, along with Sean Tansky. Our phone numbers here are 610-374-8800 or toll-free, 888-401-0459. And our dedicated text line, if you want to pass along your opinion that way, is 484-650-3373. And our email address is feedback@830weeu.com. All right, now with all that out of the way, let's go back to the phones. William in Allentown's been patiently waiting to get on. William, thank you so much for that. Good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Good morning. We speak about transvestites.
First of all, I got to ask you, William, before you go on, do you move all the time?
Yeah, I move around.
Because every time you call in, it's a different place that you're saying is your address.
I do move around thanks to the city of Reading.
All right.
They made it possible. I would just have that. Like it is. Okay, I have nothing against transvestites, but when it comes to sports, first thing you got to understand, there's only one side that does this thing, the male side. The women don't get changed over to go to the men's, only the men's to the women's. But the sad part is, if they complete the operation, complete it, like you're saying, and some don't, they're still a man. The only thing they do is they take a little baggage away. It's not there anymore. But they invert the penis. So it's still there. It's just inverted. He's still a man, period, with breasts, bigger breasts. A woman does away with her breasts but can't do away with the other part. That stays. They can have an artificial one put in, but she's still a woman because her...
All right, we don't need to get into the details here. Right. Go ahead and make your point.
People should know that. There's a difference. Do men deserve to play in women's sports, transvestites? No. They are a man no matter how they change their body. They still are a man. Except they changed the name. That's what the problem is. They want you to say they're a she, but they're not a she because they're still a man. And what they want to do to resolve the problem is very simple. Just have transvestite sports only for them. That's the way to get around all this stuff. But they shouldn't be allowed to compete with a woman because they still have the muscle features and others of a man, but they're claiming something else. Now, that's reality.
Was that
there
it?
There you go.
All right, William. Well, thank you. I appreciate you waiting through the news break to share your thoughts today.
Right, bye.
All right, bye-bye now. 610-374-8800, toll-free, 888-401-0459. Ingrid Jock, who is a columnist for the USA Today publication, has an interesting op-ed piece today titled, Trump and Biden Keep Blaming Each Other, But Voters Want Solutions, Not Chaos at the Border. And here's what she writes, and I'm only going to read part of this to you. She writes, Americans are increasingly worried about what's happening at the border, and immigration has skyrocketed to the top of voters' concerns leading up to the 2024 presidential election. While Mr. Biden has considered issuing an executive order to slow border crossings, a move he could make any time he wanted, he seems content to do nothing. He'd rather blame Donald Trump for allegedly sabotaging a bipartisan deal in the Senate that would have tightened border security and sent aid to Ukraine and Israel. And Trump certainly doesn't want Biden to get any sort of political win on migration ahead of the November election. Even so, Biden fully owns the immigration mess, which has gotten much worse under his watch. A new poll raises warnings for both Biden and Trump. The Immigration Hub, an organization that advocates for fair reform, last week released the results of a survey conducted by the Global Strategy Group. The poll surveyed 1,200 likely voters in the battleground states of Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. It found that 43% say immigration is one of their top issues, second only to inflation. The vast majority of voters say they support investing in more border security, while also allowing for more pathways to citizenship for immigrants who've lived and worked in the United States for years. That's why 65% said they thought Congress should have passed the border bill that Republicans blocked. In other words, these voters are open to compromise, something our elected officials don't seem to understand anymore. Amen to that. That's Ingrid Jock, a columnist that I like to share her thoughts with you every once in a while on this show. She appears, she's a columnist for USA Today, and her piece today has the title, Trump and Biden Keep Blaming Each Other, But Voters Want Solutions, Not Chaos at the Border. And then there is this. Wall Street Journal is reporting that the United States is set to bring a draft United Nations resolution, if they haven't already done so, because they're supposed to do it sometime today, which calls for an immediate and sustained ceasefire in Gaza. And they want it to come up to a vote before the Security Council there at the UN. This would raise the pressure on Israel to pause its five-month-old war with Hamas. The draft resolution is coming up while Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in the region pressing for a ceasefire deal in hopes that it will result in a surge in humanitarian aid into Gaza and a release of hostages held by Hamas, the U.S.-designated terrorist group whose bloody October 7th attack on Israel sparked this war. The Security Council debate is likely to be largely symbolic, reports the Wall Street Journal, but represents the most significant public divergence between Washington and Israel since this war began. The call for an immediate ceasefire in the latest U.S. draft is a shift away from Israel for the Biden administration, which has previously called for a ceasefire as soon as practicable. But wording in the draft that mentions restarting operations in Gaza after a pause, which Israel has said it intends to do, could prompt a veto by Russia or other permanent members of the UN Security Council, diplomats say. The draft also repeats the past U.S. demand that any ceasefire be tied to the release of hostages from Hamas, as Israel has demanded. It is rare for the U.S. to back, let alone put forward, a resolution that Israel would oppose in the UN, a forum where Washington has traditionally used its Security Council veto to shield Israel from proposals that it opposes. Speaking of Israel, Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, is apparently, according to an op-ed piece that appears in the Washington Journal, written by Joe Lieberman, one of the few politicians that I have respect for, and the reason why I have respect for him has nothing to do with he had a D after his name. It has to do with the fact that he's a moderate, and he's willing to compromise with the other side of the aisle. Very rare today. But anyway, he writes an op-ed piece that appears in the Wall Street Journal today with the headline, Schumer has crossed a red line over Israel. Now keep in mind, Joe Lieberman is Jewish, as is Chuck Schumer. So here's what former Senator Joe Lieberman has to write today. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer last Thursday crossed a political red line that had never before been breached by a leader of his stature and never should be again. In a speech on the Senate floor, he told the people of Israel, one of our closest allies, a true democracy that is at war with an enemy that hates America as well as the Jews, that they should vote their prime minister out of office because, quote, he has lost his way. How does Mr. Schumer think Benjamin Netanyahu lost his way? By allowing his political survival to take precedence over the best interests of Israel, he said. I don't know what Mr. Schumer was trying to accomplish, writes Mr. Lieberman. But if you study polling in the U.S. and Israel on Mr. Netanyahu personally and on the broader question of how the Israelis are conducting the war in Gaza, it looks as if Mr. Schumer's statement will have a more significant effect on political opinions in the U.S. than in Israel. Growing numbers of American voters, including a majority of Democrats and an organized bloc of leftist senators and representatives, oppose Israel's war policy in Gaza. In Israel, although Mr. Netanyahu's personal support has dropped, his policy of fighting in Gaza until Hamas is destroyed has the support of an overwhelming majority. Israelis don't want the atrocities of October 7th ever to be repeated. While Mr. Schumer's statement undoubtedly pleased American critics of Israel, for the Israelis, it was meaningless, gratuitous, and offensive. Joe Lieberman, with a piece that appears in the Wall Street Journal, titled Schumer Has Crossed a Red Line Over Israel, and I agree wholeheartedly with what he says. We'll take a break, and we'll be back with more of this Friday edition of Feedback. You're on air, Town Square, in just a bit. Stay with us.
Serving Paoli, Glenmore, Coatesville, and all of Chester County. This is News Talk 830, WEEU.
And now back to Feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
Chuck in Redding heard me read the story about members of Congress earning $1 billion in stock trades last year, and he sent me a text message that says the following. All I could think of when you read the report of Nancy Pelosi enriching herself through her office was her video of how she coped during the pandemic by eating ice cream pulled out of her top-of-the-line glass-door built-in freezer. Reminded me of Marie Antoinette. Chuck, thank you so much for your text message. I appreciate that, and thank you for listening as well. Our phone number is 610-374-8800, toll-free, 888-401-0459. And if you want to send us a text with your opinion, feel free to do so at 484-650-3373. Well, the Wall Street Journal's got an interesting article out today with a headline, America is sliding toward Chinese-style capitalism. When I saw that, that got me thinking, and so I read this. I'm not going to read the entire part, but here's what part of this article says. Who decides whether TikTok stays Chinese, is banned, or sold? Washington. Who determines whether an American or Japanese company gets to buy United States steel? Washington. Who's giving Intel $8.5 billion to make semiconductors in the U.S.? Well, you get the picture. Across the U.S., business decisions once made in boardrooms or shareholder meetings increasingly depend on politics. The U.S. isn't sliding toward socialism, in which the government controls the means of production. It may, however, be slouching toward state capitalism, in which government regularly intervenes in business to ensure it serves the national interest. Sound familiar? Think China. The problem, as both the TikTok and U.S. Steel affairs show, it is the national interest is constantly being redefined to fit the political priorities of the day. While the U.S. has never been a laissez-faire paradise, more than other countries, it believed in free market capitalism and let efficiency and profits determine the allocation of capital. Neither Donald Trump nor President Biden believe in that. Both are happy to use all the levers of the federal government, whether taxes, subsidies, regulations, or the bully pulpit, to tilt business decisions toward their own vision of the national interest. Either irony is dead, or the Communist Party there in China has a subversive sense of humor. Its entire economic model revolves around selectively flouting principles of the market economy and fair competition, including by systematically discriminating against foreign enterprises. China's state capitalism has so effectively tilted the international playing field in its own favor that it has forced others, including the United States, to adopt their own versions of state capitalism. Wow. And then there's this. Did you hear Senator Bob Menendez's comments yesterday? He came out with a video announcement yesterday, and he says that he's decided he's not going to run as a Democrat this year since he's up for re-election in the Senate. And so let me play a clip from his video announcement from yesterday. Here's Senator Menendez.
Therefore, I will not file for the Democratic primary this June. I am hopeful that my exoneration will take place this summer and allow me to pursue my candidacy as an independent Democrat in the general election. This would allow me the time to not only remind New Jerseyans of how I've succeeded in being your champion, but how we will secure our financial futures, meet the challenges of raising a family, owning a home, provide for a college education, and secure a more peaceful world for all of us to live in. I know many of you are hurt and disappointed in me with the accusations I'm facing. Believe me, I am disappointed at the false accusations as well. All I can ask of you is to withhold judgment until justice takes place.
Yeah, he's been a champion of the American public for sure, with the gold bullion that's found in his home and that expensive car in his driveway. I'm sure he's willing to share that with the public. Anyway, Menendez, who's been charged with allegedly accepting bribes and acting as an agent for the Egyptian government, argued that he was innocent against the accusations against him, as you heard him say in that announcement. This announcement by him comes just days before the filing deadline in New Jersey, where he is the U.S. senator for. The New Jersey Democrat is facing pressure to not seek re-election after being hit with multiple indictments. He pleaded not guilty to conspiring to act as a foreign agent to Egypt and later pleaded not guilty after being hit with new charges over obstruction of justice. His wife has also been hit with charges amid the scandal. One businessman has already pleaded guilty to trying to bribe the senator and his wife for political upside. Since then, several dozen Senate Democrats have urged Menendez to resign. And at this point, he's decided he's not going to run as a Democrat. He's going to run as an independent. Good luck there. All right, with that, let's go to the phones right now. Let's head to Exeter and speak with Tony this morning. Tony, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Hi, Bill. Did you hear about the, it's nothing new, but you know there's a new alliance between Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea.
Absolutely.
If you want to call it the new axis of evil, it's unbelievable. The reason why they're sticking together so much is they truly do see that the standing on the world stage with the United States is an absolute joke. It's a sin to see what's happening to our country. I think they see that we have no government structure anymore, and the government structure we have is very weak. The lack of leadership that this country has right now is very dangerous. I don't really know if there will ever be another third world war. I don't know for sure, but definitely there is a lot of turmoil going on around the world. And being now that it's known, it's on Newsmax and different news stations. And ironically, even CNN puts a couple clips on. That's very shocking to me that they do show some news facts as to what's going on. It's not as long as maybe Newsmax or Fox, but they do put some on there. One of them being the you mentioned earlier about the illegals that stormed the razor wire that took place. There is no fear of the United States anymore. There is no fear of government actions against them. And if they do get arrested, which they did arrest some of them, they are really being processed and put right back right into the United States, right into the fabric of our country. It's talking about it. Talk is cheap. There's really not much you can do about it other than be disgusted and frustrated to see what a great country we have. And people should really take a minute and look around. And if you get to travel, which my wife and I have been in California and many different states, we have a beautiful country, absolute beautiful. And even in New York City alone, New York City is a great, beautiful city. When you walk down Times Square and you look up and you see those gigantic skyscrapers, those buildings, we live in a great country. What puzzles me to no end, and I say it all the time, and I guess I say it to you on your show, Bill, is to express my First Amendment rights and get a point out, which I think is just falling on deaf ears. It doesn't matter because we have citizens in the United States that are truly happy with what our country is like right now. I really don't know if any new president can ever bring this country back totally where we were, because you have to start from the bottom up again. Our military is weak. China now has a bigger navy than us. China is threatening the United States and intimidating the United States in ways they never did before, including threatening, I don't know if they ever will, about taking back Taiwan and intimidating the United States to stay out of that area. It goes on and on and on. And you know something, Bill? What is the true cause of this? And it's going to come to an end, but we never had to go through this, but it is because of who we have in the White House. None of these problems would have occurred, for the most part that I can see, had we had a different president. We know for a fact it's occurring now because of Joe Biden's weakness and incompetence and the laughing vice president. Even when she talks, all she does is talk salad talk pretty much and then stand there and laugh about it. She's a disgrace to our country. Both of them are. But my concern is, just like I talk to you all the time, I do talk to many people. A lot of people do agree with me. But all we can do is vote. And like I said, what puzzles me the most is even if you go into the cities, and like I said, we traveled around a little bit in our day. I enjoyed it. You can talk to people that they'll say to you, I don't see anything wrong. And then you will have some that will complain about what's going on. And when you say until you change your voting habits and do away with the people that are for this, you will never see change. And like I said, and then I'll close out here, even when we get a new president, and I like I told you before, I think Trump's going to win by a landslide, and I'll come on your show and I'll eat crow in front of everyone if he does not win. But even if Trump wins, he's got so much to mop up after this incompetent Joe Biden that I think it's going to take more than 4 years. Because how do you bring rein in China again and Russia and bring these countries back in the line like Trump had them in line? How do you get Iran back again? Iran is once again a powerful nation, thanks to what Joe Biden's policies did by allowing them to, China buys oil from them. They're funding, Iran's getting all their money there. And what do they do with the money? They put it into terrorism. Why did we get it? Why did Israel get attacked? Because Iran had the power and the money to do so. Why did it all happen? It's because of a weak President Joe Biden. And close by saying, I never saw a president of the United States, which is incompetent, Joe Biden, and Harris, too, that can walk around and act like there is nothing going wrong with our country and nothing is that he did nothing wrong. It's a shock to me even his family members, grandkids, anyone that they can't see that what he did to this country is destruction. And I just hope that we, in 4 years, that we have a good vice president under Trump that can proceed 4 years after him. And, you know, they always say that history repeats itself, Bill. If you remember, there was times where the Democrats were in full control.
All right, time to wrap it up here.
Yep. And then the Republicans came back. They were in control of the House and the Senate and the White House. And I think history is going to repeat itself, and that's what's going to happen with Trump, Bill. So.
All right, Tony. Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciated the call today.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, bye-bye now. Let's go to Leesport. Bob wants to weigh in this morning. Bob, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Hey, good morning. I listened to all of the articles that you've sort of referenced today. Again, I see this pattern that Biden is the most slimy swamp creature to stalk the political arena in Washington in recent years. I mean, I see his actions. They're always done for maintaining political power and for giving himself a platform for personal prosperity. By pandering to various political interest groups, you know, that's how he manipulates his voting base, a little here, a little there, but it's always aimed at maintaining his power no matter how poorly his administration has functioned. And that's why he's flip-flopping now on Israel, by demanding an immediate ceasefire in the Security Council of the United Nations just to please his liberal friends and Palestinian supporters who voted for him the last time. I mean, he's got to keep them in, pleased in some way. That's why Biden panders to the climate change activists recently, you know. So he made an announcement on Wednesday about new regulations on tailpipe emissions. So who do you think that will help? It's mandated moves like this to EV technology, which will enrich people like Pelosi, who made her money in the tech industry, and he himself, I'm sure, is investing in those areas with the money that he has. I mean, he claims to cancel $6 billion in student debt to entice young people to vote his way as part of his coalition, too. But, you know, nobody is canceling anything. That's taxpayers who are going to pay that expense. I mean, if you don't see a pattern here, you're either unpolitically savvy, or you are blind. I don't know which, but Biden, I don't trust him. You know, one time he was this moderate, but he has become simply a liberal, willing to, you know, prostrate himself and his political reputation just for the sake of maintaining his power, keeping that that position going.
All right, Bob, appreciate the opinion that you shared with us
today.
Yeah,
here's something else, too. Yeah. You know, when you have Dr. Blessing on, the United States also is being disrespected over in Africa. Just in Niger, they just told us to leave with our 1,000 troops there. We had a listening station for all of the Sahel, the northern dry spot. You know, you may want to ask him about those things. Africa is really turning away from us. And I see a pattern there, too, with religion. The Methodists, there's something called the Global Methodists. Why? Because they're upset with the transgender stuff that the Methodist Church has now adopted. And in other parts of the world, the Africans are turning away from U.S.-led religious denominations, too, when they turn onto this woke path. And they've started something called the Global Methodists, and there are a number of churches in the United States, too, have left the United Methodists and plan to join them. I mean, there's a lot of restlessness in the world as to looking to the United States no longer as someone who they want to follow.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned Niger, because there's an op-ed piece that appeared earlier this week in the Wall Street Journal that I'm going to share with Tim. The headline reads, Biden weakens America's global clout, and one of the very first paragraph talks about Niger.
Okay.
So, yes, that definitely will be part of the conversation
today.
Yeah,
I'll be listening to see what his comments are on that. Okay.
All right, Bob, thanks for calling.
Take care. Yep.
Bye-bye now. Mike in Fleetwood, bear with me, buddy. I got to take care of a little bit of business first, but I will take your call first thing when we return with this Friday edition of Feedback. Thank you, folks, for tuning in today. Appreciate you being on your end of the radio or the internet, whatever the case might be. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a bit.
Serving Myerstown, Fredericksburg, Newmanstown, and all of Lebanon County, this is News Talk 830 WEEU.
And now back to Feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
Now, don't forget, coming up during the 11 o'clock hour, Dr. Tim Blessing, a history professor at Alvernia University, will join me. And our discussion will center around the question, is the United States still a relevant player on the international stage? I can't wait to hear what Dr. Blessing has to say about that. I look forward to him coming on the show every time, and I learn something new all the time when he's with us. So stay with us during the 11 o'clock hour for that. Right now, let's go to Fleetwood. I want to thank Mike for hanging in there and staying on the line. I want to hear what he has to say about an incident down there in Philadelphia. Good morning, Mike.
Yeah, how are you? How are you, Bill?
I'm fine.
excuse me. Yes, was watching the news about 20 minutes or so ago. Now, we know this shooting that happened in Philly. There were five young men that they were looking for wearing black hoodies. Well, they found them all. And the reporter who just made the announcement about the fact that they found the fifth was a young black reporter with a dark gray hoodie on his head. It's like, no, wait a second. We're looking for people with wearing black hoodies, and here you are reporting this wearing a dark gray hoodie. It's like, you know, at least wear a jacket of some kind. It was just amazing to me to think that somebody let him go on the air wearing this stuff that almost was just about exactly what these other guys were wearing when they did the shooting. It's like, well, who monitors these reporters?
Well, I didn't see the report, so I can't comment on that. The shooting that you're referring to, is this the one that took place regarding a SEPTA bus? Is that the
Correct.
Shooting we're talking about?
Correct. And everybody involved were wearing dark black hoodies.
Wow.
And then, like, as I said, the reporter just a few minutes ago was wearing a dark gray hoodie.
Did he indicate or did the authorities say in any way that these suspects or gang members at all, or was there any reference to gang related activity here or that the gangs were involved in this shooting at all, or no?
It's a very, they, you know how it is. They try to cover themselves. It's like, it's a very good possibility that it was gang related, but they stopped short of saying, oh yes, it was gang related.
I'm just saying that because of the fact that they were all wearing the same types of clothing. That's what made me think gang-related at that point.
Right. It's just, yeah, that's the way the news does it sometimes. Just enough to make you think, but let's not exactly tell you what, because we don't really know, but we think that it might be related to gangs.
Yeah, and they've got to be careful. Yeah,
they
have to be careful with what they say because police are very protective with what information they're willing to release. So that they don't jeopardize the case down the road once it gets into court. So I do understand that.
Yes, but I think officially they were looking for five, and they got all five.
Well, that's good to hear. That's good to hear. All right, Mike. Well, thanks for weighing in, and thanks for hanging in there on the line to talk to us today.
Of course. No problem.
All right.
Thank
take
you.
Care. Bye-bye now. 610-374-8800, toll-free, 888-401-0459. Speaking of the police... Did you hear this? I thought President Biden was friends with the unions. But wait to hear this that I got from Fox News. The largest police union in the state of Florida announced yesterday which presidential candidate it plans on backing in the November general election. Florida Police Benevolent Association, or PBA for short, their president, John Kazanjian, declared his organization will be supporting former President Trump over President Biden and other third-party candidates, arguing that Trump is the right person to handle the many crises facing the nation, according to a letter that we shared with Fox News Digital. In that letter, President of this police union says the following. It's no secret that over the past 4 years, under the current administration, America has regressed. Law enforcement officers are leaving their jobs in record numbers throughout this country. Crime is rising in our major cities, and over 8 million migrants have entered this country, putting a heavy and untenable strain on the ability of local municipalities to effectively maintain public safety and provide essential services to the citizens of this country, Kazanjian wrote in his letter. He praised what he said were the successes of Trump's administration and said that another term for the former president would mean police would be defended and the border crisis would be addressed. Wow. So there's one union that is not in support of this current president. And we also mentioned yesterday where there's another union that represents part of the energy sector is also not happy with Mr. Biden and Governor Shapiro, for that matter, over their decisions regarding coal and natural gas. But with that said, members of the Republican Party in the House are filing a lawsuit against two Department of Justice officials because those officials have snubbed subpoenas that were sent to them. I got this from the Washington Examiner. The lawsuit was filed yesterday against two Department of Justice officials who were involved in the department's prosecution of Hunter Biden, saying the officials defied subpoenas by refusing to appear for their depositions. The House Judiciary Committee asked in its complaint that the U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C., force the officials, both of whom work in the DOJ Tax Division, to comply with the subpoenas and meet with the committee for interviews. The officials, Senior Litigation Counsel Mark Daly and Trial Attorney Jack Morgan, were present at a meeting of DOJ headquarters in June of 2022 about prosecution decisions related to Biden. Gary Shapley, an IRS criminal investigator turned whistleblower, who was also present at the meeting, alleged to Congress that the tax division opposed bringing charges against Hunter Biden during that meeting. The committee has been engaged for several months in a tedious back and forth with the DOJ about obtaining testimony from Daly and Morgan, but the department has resisted allowing the depositions. The DOJ has cited numerous reasons for objecting to the pair testifying, including that the department does not permit line-level employees to testify, particularly about open matters such as the Biden case. The DOJ brought 9 tax charges against the first son last year, and Hunter Biden is currently fighting them in court. Allowing DOJ officials to speak outside of court about the case could jeopardize it, the DOJ has said, for reasonings why those two men have refused to comply with the subpoenas. And then there is this. Do I have time to share this, or at least part of it anyway? Tiana Lowe Doscher wrote a piece for the Washington Examiner with the headline, "If RICO was not a crime, Trump would be off the hook in Georgia." She's referencing that remark that AOC made during a hearing, I guess, that appeared on Wednesday, because we played AOC's comments and the back and forth between her and Tony Bobulinski on yesterday's show, where, remember, where AOC said, RICO's not a crime? Well, anyway, here's what Tiana Doscher has to write. After her nonsensical assertion that RICO is not a crime, rather than crack open criminal law for dummies, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has reiterated her claim. Here's what she wrote on X immediately following that hearing. RICO is a statute under which specific crimes may be considered: kidnapping, robbery, arson, etc. You need to name the crimes in order to substantiate RICO. Well, Ms. Doscher writes, it is indeed true that the Federal Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act is a statute, as are its corresponding state laws. But violating any of these RICO statutes or committing RICO crimes are, in fact, crimes. The underlying acts in furtherance of the alleged conspiracy in question do not have to be crimes like robbery or arson or even acts of violence. but there does have to be someone who committed a crime somewhere along the way. And if RICO is not a crime, writes Ms. Dosher, then Donald Trump and 18 other co-defendants would not be facing the blockbuster criminal indictment that Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis wishes to weaponize to stop the former president from returning to the White House. She goes on, Ms. Dosher goes on in her piece, but you get the point. Again, AOC specifically pointed to Tony Bobulinski and said, what crime did Joe Biden commit? Well, among the list of crimes he listed, even though she was shouting over him, was RICO. And that's when she said, RICO's not a crime. Oh, my. And she's making decisions that impact you and me. With that said, we'll take a break and we'll be back with more of Feedback in just a bit.
News, weather, and traffic.
It's a source I can trust.
A new generation of talk. News Talk 830 WEEU.
The voice of Berks and Beyond.
And that wraps up hour number two. Stay with us, because coming up in the third hour, we're going to discuss the question, is the United States still a relevant player on the international stage? Yeah, Dr. Timothy Blessing, a history professor from Alberta University, joins me to discuss that very topic. Stay with us and we'll take your questions too. But right now, we're going to break for news with Radio PA and ABC, and our own Bob McCool will check in with the latest in sports. It's all here on the voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU, and thank you so much for making us part of your day today.
The voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back as we kick off the third and final hour of this Friday edition of Feedback, your on-air town square. Good morning, everyone. I'm Bill Saunders along with Sean Tansky. Our phone numbers here are 610-374-8800 or toll-free 888-401-0459. And you can text us your opinion now, or in this case, your question to 484-650-3373. And our email address is feedback@830weeu.com. Well, if the conversation that Dr. Tim and I had during the news break is any indication, boy, we're heading for an interesting conversation today for this hour. The question that's before us now is the United States still a relevant player on the international stage? And I can't wait to hear what Dr. Blessing has to say. Tim, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Well, I'm glad to be here, Bill.
So we did a lot of talking during the news break there. So how do you want to start this? I mean, with give me a synopsis, if you will, of where the United States stands as far as being a world leader today.
Well, you know, we are still the most powerful military on the planet at this moment.
Okay.
And monetarily, we still have the largest economy, although that's a close thing. China, may have claimed that.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is almost all the indicators are going in the wrong direction. And what do I mean by indicators? Well, if we talk about industrial capacity, and I know that your listeners are just dying to hear about industrial capacity, but the industrial capacity of the United States, as we were talking about over the break here, we cannot produce enough war material to last 1 week in a war. We cannot, in fact, I checked this morning, we can produce quickly 3 days' worth of ammunition.
Oh, wow.
So our stocks have been drawn way down by trying to help Ukraine.
Mm-hmm, right.
And the thing is because we have deindustrialized, we are having a terrible time just keeping our stocks. That's our stocks of ammunition and other war material, up to snuff. We can't get back to where we were before the Ukraine war. We just simply don't have the capacity. At one time, we were the arsenal of democracy. Right now, I think, as I said to you, we aren't the arsenal of North Dakota.
Wow.
So we really have severe problems in terms of our military posture and our military capabilities. at this point. Now, we have some very modern stuff on it. Don't get me wrong. We have some very modern stuff in the pipeline, or stuff that actually is out there. But the reality is we don't have a lot of it because, remember, Donald Trump won Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania in 2016. What did he win it on? The fact that the jobs had been offshored. Where did they get offshored to? They got offshored to China. China has whatever you think of Xi, and frankly, I think he's a murderous thug. But whatever you think of Xi, he is a competent leader. Okay, he may not be a leader I would like to have, but he's a but let's not deny his competence, and he has, through a series of programs, greatly increased China's capacity, and where he couldn't increase China's capacity, because there's some internal problems in China, where he couldn't increase China's capacity, he's been able to farm out his problems to other places. You know, Donald Trump's remark about bloodbath in the car industry.
Right. Well,
he's right.
Mm-hmm.
China is helping Mexico. There's a program for this. It's called the Belt and Road Program. China is helping Mexico found its own car industry. The labor in Mexico is much less expensive than here in the United States. And as a result, if those car factories go up, and we can't stop them from going up, the United Auto Workers are going to be in a terrible shape. You're not going to have jobs. Now, let's take it one step further. If you don't have an auto industry and something goes south on you and you need to get put up military affairs, if you don't have an auto industry, you can't build tanks. If you don't have an auto industry, you can't build personnel carriers. If you don't have an auto industry, you can't build Jeeps. And so what we're looking at is China is collapsing our military capability, not directly, but indirectly. And they're doing a pretty good job of it.
Is this one of the reasons why the Biden administration is very concerned about Japan buying U.S. steel?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we don't have a steel industry. I knew the HR manager for what at that time was the largest remaining steel industry in the United States, and they were buying what are called pocket plants because there's not enough demand in the United States for U.S. steel to keep a major steel plant open.
Wow.
You drive out to Pittsburgh, you're not going to see steel plants,
mm-hmm.
I can guarantee you.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no place in the country where you have anything beyond pocket-sized plants because we simply can't sell U.S. steel to U.S. customers.
Mm-hmm.
So we need customers overseas. Well, guess what? We don't. Why should they buy the U.S.'s expensive steel when China or other places, and I don't want to just focus on China here, but other places can make steel at half the price or a quarter of the price. So, there's another problem here, which is we have not invested in the kind of activities which give you the makings for steel. That is, in order to make steel, you have to have coal. And there's some reasons for that. But you also have to have iron ore. Well, the Mesabi Range up in Michigan is pretty well played out, and we have not invested in creating new. We have pockets of steel which we can use, pockets of iron we can use. Only thing is we can't use them, or we don't use them. Last time I was out at Bryce Canyon, and I'm a hiker, and you know I like to think I spend a lot of time in the environment, and I was at Bryce Canyon. And the park ranger there said, it's a wonderful thing. You know, they were going to build a coal mine. This is about maybe 50 miles from the from Bryce. But we were able to stop it. And I'm thinking, what's good about that? You know, because that makes us even more dependent upon other countries.
Mm-hmm, right.
And so, you know, for the listeners on the program here, you know, Bill and I aren't going to see, aren't going to be around for all of this, but your children and your grandchildren are going to be around for all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really have a serious problem here. We simply don't produce enough. We don't come close to producing enough. Whether it's paper clips or whether it's Jeeps, we don't produce enough of it. And that's it. The collapse of the American industrial sector. Now, not every place. Let's be clear about that. It's not all of American industry has collapsed, but the collapse of what you would call heavy industries,
right,
And the fuel sources that fuel those heavy industries, we're looking at a flat-out disaster.
Well, we certainly had a wake-up call when the pandemic hit, and we had the supply chain shortage, one of the reasons being that a lot of our manufacturing went overseas, and our CEOs were all thinking just in time. That process of because of our computers and able to keep track of our inventory, we won't produce things and stockpile them up. We'll wait until we're in need of it.
Well, the economist in me, and I know my master's was in economic history, the economist in me says, oh, yeah, this is how to do it. Because, you know, you have the kind of free trade where one country does one thing efficiently, mm-hmm, another country does another thing efficiently. That works very well. Mm-hmm. It works very well economically. But in terms of protecting yourself and our allies, it works terribly. And I think that's the wake-up call, is that, you know, when you remember the pictures from 2021 of ships being stacked 75 deep, mm-hmm, at San Diego.
Right.
Well, I mean, this is just a disaster. Mm-hmm. And frankly, if you look at the numbers, we are not replacing the industries which have gone overseas or which have grown old and can no longer produce as they used to.
So on top of all this, you've got a strategic petroleum reserve that's been drastically lowered.
Right.
Now, the Biden administration is trying to resupply that, but we've got a ways to go to bring it back up to where it was. That, too, is causing a problem for us, is it not?
Well, the whole fuel infrastructure problem is a major one. Yes, you're right. They did, in order to bring gas prices down, they did drain the strategic reserve. And that's not as big as people think it is. But the thing
is... Meaning what, when you say it's not as big as...
Well, actually, as countries go, we actually have a relatively small strategic reserve. Mm-hmm. But the problem we're having in refilling it is the issuance of licenses. You have to get a license to drill in most places where you want to drill. And the Biden administration, and I understand their concern here, does not want to issue those licenses,
right?
In large part due to environmental concerns.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're talking about the North Slope of Alaska, that's really fragile territory up there.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I used to live on the Gulf of Mexico, if you get a rupture in one of those wells, you got problems.
Right.
So I understand their reluctance, but the long-term effect of this has been that anything that happens in the oil market is going to have a really serious ricochet effect here in the United States. Now, we have an abundance of natural gas, an absolute abundance. We have an abundance of oil, believe it or not. Not easy to get at, but it's there. But the problem is, of course, is that you're weighing environmental concerns versus military concerns here. And so different administrations over a period of time have generally favored the environmental concerns over that. Now, not all administrations, but I would say since Reagan, probably most.
Mm-hmm.
And the end result has just been that we, besides lacking iron and besides lacking steel and besides lacking transistors, microchips,
right,
which we were talking about over the break, you need rare earths for those. Well, who owns the rare earths? China and Turkey. Turkey is a member of NATO, but that's a matter of convenience, I suspect, on the part of the Turks.
Mm-hmm. Why do you say that? Why do you say that it's a matter of convenience for them?
Well, no matter what Turkey does, it always has Russia as a northern neighbor. So it needs the... alliance with us in order to balance Russia.
Okay.
So I don't think Turkey is going anywhere. But the flip side of that is Turkey is not exactly helping us in the Middle East. Why should it? So it can just say, what conflict? I don't see any conflict.
Hmm.
And as a result, they are not committed to do anything for us. NATO is, I think, misunderstood. NATO is supposed to be a defensive pact,
right.
And it is.
Right.
And it is. NATO cannot, or pretty much cannot, go on the offensive. It's designed for defense.
Mm-hmm.
And the end result, therefore, is that we just simply, we don't have any pressure we can bring on Turkey. The only country that pressures Turkey is Russia, and that's the only reason why Turkey stays with us. And they do it kind of with both fingers on both hands crossed.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't, name for me a strong ally we have in the Middle East.
Wow.
You know, outside of Israel. You know, which,
yeah, well, now that's coming into question.
And
isn't
there
it?
You have a problem, don't we?
Yeah, we do. Which I want to get to a little bit later on. I want to get your take on Senate Majority Leader Schumer's comments about Israel on the Senate floor in a bit. But sticking with NATO for a moment, do the other NATO members really need the United States today, based on what you've just said about our lack of industrial power today and how long it would take us to rebuild our military presence? Are we really an important member anymore in NATO?
Well, yes, we are. We are an important member of NATO. But that's because that's how NATO is arranged. If right now we left NATO, so we would drop from 31 member states to 30, what would happen is that those 30 states would then begin to take responsibility for their own defense.
Mm-hmm, right.
And they would just simply rearrange it. We are not if we leave NATO, NATO does not fall apart. In fact, it may even grow stronger.
And that was where I was coming from with my question to you. But you look at Donald Trump, who has been threatening for quite a while to withdraw from NATO if the other countries don't build up their financial support.
That's correct.
For the group. Is that where you were coming from with your answer that we're needed in NATO because of our monetary contributions to that group?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't know to what degree NATO nations pay much attention to us, but they would have to spend, Germany would have to spend a lot more. And I understand Trump's criticism of Germany.
Mm-hmm.
He's right about that. But the reality is that the NATO nations, since you've got 30 of them now, and you may soon have some more coming aboard, the NATO nations would have to increase their spending somewhat. A nation like the United Kingdom, not that much. Germany would have to probably double its contribution. But some states in NATO are quite weak. Greeks coming immediately to mind. Their economy is a basket case. They can't spend more.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But what would happen Germany would simply take over Greece. I mean, it would remain as an independent country, but their orders would come from Berlin. So as a result, many of these NATO countries can't increase their spending. They simply don't have the economic base to do so.
Is Germany's situation because of World War II? Does it go back to that, or are there other aspects as to why Germany is not contributing as much as they should?
Since the days Konrad Adenauer, some of you may remember Konrad mm-hmm. Adenauer, mm-hmm. but West Germany did a very good job of rebuilding, and sometimes called the West German miracle.
Right.
And then you have Helmut Kohl, mm-hmm. followed by Angela Merkel,
mm-hmm.
and two very strong leaders, two very capable leaders, and they did a heck of a job of rebuilding Eastern Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So, Margaret Thatcher used to warn people before she got booted out by her own party, Maggie Thatcher used to warn people that you can't let Germany reunite, because what's going to happen is Germany is going to dominate Europe, and that's what's happened.
Gotcha. Okay.
So
we've got a lot to talk about still on mm-hmm. this very interesting topic, and we will return in just a bit. My guest this morning is Dr. Timothy Blessing, a history professor with Alvernia University. And our number is here if you'd like to weigh in on the topic of conversation, 610-374-8800 or toll-free, 888-401-0459. Feedback returns in just a bit. Stay with us.
serving Barnesville, Schuylkill Haven, Tremont, and all of Schuylkill County. This is News Talk 830 WEEU.
And now back to Feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback. My guest is Dr. Timothy Blessing. And the question before us today, is America relevant, still relevant, in the international or on the international stage? Your questions are always welcome here at 610-374-8800 or toll free, 888-401-0459. We've got a couple of people on the line now who have a question for you, Dr. Blessing, and we'll get to those in just a minute. So folks, hang in there. But first, I want to get your take on something here, Tim. Earlier this week, I shared with the audience an op-ed piece that appeared in the Wall Street Journal. Mm-hmm. The headline was, Biden weakens America's global clout. And I'm just going to read the first two paragraphs here to you. With Niger's gross domestic product at a miserable $545 per person in 2022, the United Nations ranks the landlocked country as one of the five least developed nations on the planet. Over the weekend, last weekend they're referring to, Niger's government responded to American accusations that it was negotiating to sell uranium to Iran by ending military cooperation with the U.S. The decision is another win for Vladimir Putin's effort to extend Russian power, a welcome boost to Iran, and a serious blow to America's plans for combating the return of jihadist violence across a swath of Africa.
Right.
What's your take on that?
Well, it's not terribly surprising. We have a large counterterrorism force in Niger. But frankly, we accuse the folks of Niger of engaging in an underhanded uranium deal with Iran. If you remember, about 2 months ago, I was on here about Iran and the fact that they're trying to build a naval base in Venezuela.
Right. Yes,
probably,
I recall
probably
that.
Probably are going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no question in my mind that Niger, which has this low, very low, income level, they certainly welcome it. So we accuse them of dealing underhandedly with Iran, and the Iranians told us to go chase our tails.
Mm-hmm.
And so that says something about how strong the U.S. is perceived to be and how likely we are to follow through in our threats.
Mm-hmm.
The Iranian leadership, the Nigerian leadership just simply told us literally to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And that anybody representing the U.S., so this would not apply to tourists, but anybody representing the U.S. is on Niger territory illegally. Well, you know, back 30 years ago, this would not have happened. Why? Because, the U.S. in those days was a better friend than an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the way it is anymore. Mm-hmm. Because Niger, poor as it is, can go to Iran. They can go to Russia. They can go to China. There are many other for those who say that Russia is bankrupt, that happens to be true. But the thing is they have a steady income thanks to their oil. Only about 30 nations are engaged with the United States in terms of the Ukraine. So as a result, once you're beyond the NATO orbit, we don't have many allies.
Yeah, this is true.
In the war with Ukraine. So as a result, Niger knows perfectly well that we aren't the only game in town.
Mm-hmm.
And the Chinese, with their Belt and Road program, which is a really important thing, is able to offer Niger credits, which it can't find any other place once it gets rid of the U.S. And, of course, Iranians will be happy to meet whatever term to get uranium. The Iranians will be happy to meet whatever terms Niger intends to impose.
Wow.
So this is not surprising at all.
What does that say to you when such a small country basically tells us to go to hell?
No, that tells us how weak we are. We're still the strongest economy in the world, and we still have the strongest military in the world. But what's happened is, as we have dithered, we have not had a clear leadership since Reagan. In fact, I think there was a Wall Street Journal article on this within the past week or 10 days. But since Reagan, we have not been. We have repeatedly gone in the wrong direction in terms of maintaining a warlike portfolio. I'm sorry to tell our listeners this, but the world's still a dangerous place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually getting more so because we are, by our continued refusal to look at the military realities of the world, and to be truthful, to some of the economic realities of the world, we have destabilized the world. And I want to take this one step further. We are spending money at a tremendous rate. And, you know, trillions of, not billions, but trillions of dollars. Well, the United States currency is the reserve currency of the world. But as we print more and more money without anything to back it, what happens is other nations are now acting as the de facto reserve currency. Mm-hmm. You'd rather have Chinese money in your vault than U.S. money.
Mm-hmm.
And people who say, well, you know, inflation has dropped. Well, in a technical sense, yes. But in reality, over the last three, 4 years, we're probably dating back in the pandemic, we have had 21% inflation. You cannot remain the reserve currency and have that level of inflation. And by the way, if you deflate, you lose jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So we put ourselves in, sometimes for the best of reasons, we put ourselves into a not just a corner, but a maze. And I'm not sure that anyone knows what the key to this maze is.
Now, the message here is not that all the blame rests with Joe Biden.
Oh, no,
I mean,
a lot of this
happened before he became president.
Long before. I mean, you can go back to, well, look at George H.W. Bush. Read my lips, no more taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And then, 2 years later, he swings in the other direction. Well, when you do swings like that, for God's sakes, you're going to lose the confidence of the financial community,
true.
As you should.
True.
As
right.
you should.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have carved this erratic course. Other nations note that we are destabilizing. And if you don't believe that, go look at the dispute between Texas and the United States over the border.
Mm-hmm.
So we are destabilizing in all directions. And I sit there. I try to stay out of these things. But there's no question that America is not seen as a stable country anymore.
All right, let's go to the phones. We have a couple of people who have been on hold here for you. Let's start with Matt in Shillington. Matt, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Good morning, gentlemen. Regarding our status as a world power, I want to zoom in specifically on Ukraine. A simple three-part question, Dr. Blessing. One, how concerned are our NATO allies that the U.S. will withdraw support for Ukraine? How concerned are you that the United States will withdraw support for Ukraine? And finally, what would you think will happen if we do withdraw support for Ukraine?
Well, those are tough questions. I can't speak to what our NATO partners are thinking about our reliability in terms of the Ukraine. I flat out don't know. But I do know that our NATO partners are growing weary of the whole thing, except for those who are on the front line, like Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, Poland, Romania, places
right.
like that.
Right.
So those folks who are among the weaker members of NATO are deeply worried about what our intentions are. Give me the second question again, please.
How concerned are you with what's going on in Congress? How concerned are you that we would withdraw support for Ukraine? And indeed, if we did, as a historian or a future looking ahead, what do you think will happen?
Well, I don't see how Ukraine can, we could have someone on here who knows a little bit more about military and demographics than I do, but the reality is we are killing a generation of Ukrainians, the young men of Ukraine from about 16 up to about 55 are simply being wiped out in this war. And so while it's actually almost two generations mm-hmm. of Ukrainians are dying. So the question is even if we could give them supplies, can we support them? And at this stage of the game, I'm thinking it's getting more less and less likely. So as an indicator of the weak, of how weak the United States has become, a withdrawal from the Ukraine is would be a disaster militarily and in terms of foreign policy. So I think we may end up doing a de facto withdrawal from Ukraine, but since we can't supply them with ammunition, we can't give them the missiles to defend themselves with because we've run out of them. We may continue to give lip service, but we can't give them anything else. We can't give them something that you can offload off a boat and put on the front line. So we may be looking, and it will be a serious blow to America's reputation if once it becomes known, and it will become known, that de facto, whatever we may say, we just cannot supply a small country like Ukraine with enough weapons to defend what's a small border.
Wow.
So yeah. Now this we're looking at a disaster here, and I don't see any way out of it. We just don't have the capacity, the industrial capacity, to continue to fight in Ukraine, at least at the level we have been fighting.
Matt, thank you so much. Appreciated the call today. Going to take a break here. Debbie and Richard, in that order, I will take your questions next when we return from this commercial break. Timothy Blessing, Dr. Blessing from Alberni University is my guest today. And we'll be back with more with Dr. Blessing in just a bit. Stay with us.
Serving Tamaqua, Pottsville, Pine Grove, and all of Schuylkill County. This is News Talk 830 WEEU.
The voice of Berks and Beyond.
I know I promised that when we came out of the commercial break, I was going to go right to the calls. Forgive me, Debbie and Richard, but some news has broken here that I'd like Dr. Blessing to address and then get his take on what that means. So what did you just see?
So essentially, the Russian veto just... Russia and China just vetoed a U.S. resolution in the U.N. calling for immediate ceasefire in Gaza. So what that means is Russia and China have decided to let Israel cook in its own juices because they're not getting an off-ramp, mm-hmm. at least not from the U.N.
Right.
But what that says basically to us is that we're on the hook now because we support Israel. So this is going to damage our reputation worldwide. And, of course, and that also says that Biden is going to be blamed, continue to be blamed, because he's a strong supporter of Israel. This is going mm-hmm. to divide the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
And if it divides the Democratic Party, then, some people aren't going to turn out to vote for Mr. Biden. I think they want to have Mr. Trump back in charge here. Why? Because Trump's divisive. And as a result, you know, the reaction of Trump is going to be, if Trump is elected, the reaction is going to be ferocious. But even if Trump isn't elected, the reaction is going to be ferocious. So this is a win-win-win for China. They for China and Russia, they get to keep Israel on the hook. They get to keep Biden on the hook, and they can divide the United States even more thoroughly than we are divided now.
So if I heard you correctly, you think that Russia and China want Trump to be president?
Yes, sir.
This year?
Yes, I believe that to be true.
Wow. All right, let's go to the phones. Debbie's been waiting on hold for quite a bit. Debbie in Coatesville, good morning. Welcome to Feedback, Debbie.
Hello. Dr. Blessing's information is so extremely important. He should be in front of the House and the Senate, and they should listen to him, but they would never give him the time to do that. Now, from our Afghan withdrawal, the overwhelming border migrants, our low reserves of oil, the severe debt spending. How deeply do you feel we have to go before this country is in extreme, desperate trouble?
Nothing lasts forever, Debbie.
I know, but we all lived through the 1968 and 70s. I thought the Vietnam broke this country. This I have never seen in my life, and I read a lot of sites. This is overwhelmingly very desperate. And I don't feel it's Biden, Mayorkas, the other general. I don't think they can bring us out of this.
Well, this, as Bill has been indicating here, and I've certainly agreed with Bill, is this has been building since the days of Nixon and Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Nixon, yeah, right.
Yeah, Watergate. You know, Carter was basically hamstrung as a president because of Watergate and because of Vietnam, to be truthful with you. Reagan's the only president in recent decades who could lead strongly, but that's because he was Ronald Reagan. It was a one-person rule, to be truthful with you. And we have really had a truly competent president, but that may be because you can't be competent in the present atmosphere. So I'm not looking forward to miracles here. And I think that people need, you know, the old saying is we need to stop shouting and start talking to each other. Well, we need to stop shouting. I'm not sure we're going to start talking to each other, but we at least need to stop shouting.
Debbie, thanks for the call today. Appreciate you taking the time to do so. Let's go to Richard in Wyomissing. Richard, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Oh, good morning. Dr. Blessing, I was just wondering how much you feel diversity and demographic changes have led the Republican Party to turn away from democracy in the 21st century. I know after the hope of Carter, when Carter left office, Obama, mm-hmm. when Obama left office, the Freedom House Index rated the United States a score of 90. The index mm-hmm. usually, as you know, rates from 0 to 100, sure. with the 100 being the most democratic, and that was good in
Richard, we have very little time here. Get to your question.
Okay, my question is, do you feel that the Republican Party has turned away from democracy in the 21st century because, you know, they don't really want us to be a multiracial democracy, as Stephen Levitsky and Daniel Ziblatt say in their book, Tyranny of the Minority and How Democracy.
Okay, Richard, are you? Now you said the Democratic Party. Did you mean the Republican Party?
One of the two major parties, the Republican Party, has turned away from democracy in the 20th century.
All right, let's get Dr. Blessing's take. Go ahead.
I want to give you some statistics here. In the 2021 race in Virginia, the governor's race in Virginia, where they elected the governor and the attorney general and the lieutenant general, the lieutenant general is a black woman, I believe from Jamaica, if I remember correctly, and the attorney general was a Hispanic I believe, Cuban background. MAGA voters elected those two, and I can show you the statistics. Democrats voted against the black woman and against the Hispanic. Republican voters voted for the black woman and for the Hispanic. So the idea that this is racially, you know, certainly if you're out burning crosses, you're probably voting Republican. But having said that, is that this breaking down, this party's racist and that party isn't, and so on and so forth, that it doesn't, I can show you a ton of statistics which will show that what MAGA voters and Democratic voters are voting on tends to be more policy. We have more political involvement now than at any time since 1900 in the McKinley Bryan race. That's the second time McKinley and Bryan faced off against each other. So to hold that one party is this and the other party is that is fundamentally incorrect, because it's not borne out by the statistics. It's not borne out by the voting results. So it's much more complicated than that.
Richard, thanks for your call today. I wish I could take any more calls, but we're out of time. And I did want to ask Tim before we ended today, Latin America. What's going on down there?
We simply have lost Latin America. Latin America is on the Chinese payroll, and there, you can look at Costa Rica, perhaps Colombia, Argentina. They're otherwise, well, of course, Brazil, but Brazil is playing its own game. Mm-hmm. It's big enough to do so. Mm-hmm. But basically, Latin America right now is lost to us. And you can just look at our southern border and see how many people are getting out. of Latin America. So we have a real disaster which no paper on the planet is reporting on. And that's terrible.
Wow.
Sounds like we could do an entire segment just on that.
Yes, we could.
Tim, thank you.
My pleasure.
As always, no, my pleasure for sure. Always love it when Tim Blessing is on with us from Alverni University. And I want to thank everybody who called in today. I wish we had more time with you, buddy. I really do. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back with the final seconds of feedback on this Friday morning in just a bit. Stay with us.
That matter to me.
A new generation of talk. News Talk 830 WEEU.
The voice of Berks and Beyond.
I want to be with you. I want to be with you, baby. Yeah, baby. I want to be with you. I want to be with you, baby. Yeah, baby. I want to be with you.
I want to remind you, next week we've got on Tuesday, during the 11 o'clock hour, State Senator Tracy Penichuk will be here, and we'll talk to her about things that are happening in Harrisburg. Then on Thursday, during the 11 o'clock hour, it's Jay Rural from Helping Harvest with us. And on Friday at 10 o'clock, it'll be Berks County Commissioner Chairman Christian Leinbach with me, as it'll be another episode of Ask the Commissioner here on Feedback. So we've got quite a week coming up next week here on Feedback. And I want to thank everybody who spent their time with us, whether it was providing your opinion over the phone or by text or by email. Either way, thank you for sharing your thoughts, because you folks are the stars of the show. We'll do it again next week. Want to thank my producer, Sean Tansky. Thank you, buddy.
No problem, Bill.
Looking forward to seeing you again next week. And right now it's news time with Radio PA and ABC. And Bob McCool will have a check on sports before we head things over to Dan Bongino from noon to 3, followed by the Ramsey Show from 3 to 6. As your whole afternoon of talk radio continues here on the voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Don't forget Jack's Backyard tomorrow from 8 to 10 with my buddy Jack Holcomb. And until Monday, make it a great rest of your day today. That'll do it for this episode of Feedback. To comment on the show, you can email us at feedback@830weeu.com. You can also hear our show live from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern Time at 830weeu.com or on the TuneIn app. For producer Sean Tansky, I'm Bill Saunders. Thanks for listening.